This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Now on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT, HD, WOGL, HD3, Philadelphia.
Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor.
If we don't move in our own direction, we're going to become extinct. In fact, in some cases, we're close to being extinct right now.
Presented by Weinerman Pain and Wellness, serious doctors for serious injuries. And powered by the law offices of Pond, Lehock, Eastern, Giordano. Talk, listen, and speak to the region's most influential leaders. It's Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor.
And good evening, Delaware Valley, and welcome in. This is Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, along with J-Doc. I'm Krause in the studio on a Saturday night. J-Doc, we welcome everyone in to our broadcast tonight. A special broadcast, a serious topic, a serious conversation, labor and the RICO Act.
Yeah, Joe, anybody that knows me and my family knows that our family has been affected incredibly by this type of situation, and certainly this show is going to be near and dear to me. I'm ecstatic to welcome onto the program Mark Cedrone and Joe Mancano of Cedrone and Mancano, and they're two of the foremost experts in this particular area. I'm going to also disclose that they're my father's attorneys, and I'll tell you one. And before I welcome them to the show. This show is so important to me because I was in court when Mark Cedrone was there for my father's sentencing. And I heard him say to the judge, "Your Honor, I've reviewed these transcripts and I, for the life of me, cannot understand, you know, my client's relationship, you know, to these crimes." And which really struck me, and certainly several other things that were, you know, so important to me that I wanted other labor leaders to obviously get the same education that I wish my father had during this time. And at the same time, you know, Mark and Joe are going to do a phenomenal job at talking about all the circumstances. So, Mark, welcome to the show, and Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
Thanks very much.
It's great to have you. And again, I'm not here to, you know, this isn't a bash the government show. This is information and really incredible stuff, like mind-boggling. So
let me do this too, J-Doc. Before you start, let me just give our listening audience an outline of the program today. We're going to cover in three different segments. Following the opening segment, we'll break down and get into some very, very specific things as we roll on over the next hour. And all of the topics of conversation tonight will follow under our title tonight of Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor, Labor and the RICO Act.
Absolutely. Mark, tell us why it's so important for labor leaders and really the general public to understand labor, especially laborers, obviously labor and the RICO Act is.
Well, the RICO Act is, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later in the program, but the RICO Act is a in many respects, is a tool of law enforcement that gives law enforcement significant advantages in prosecuting people. And historically, and again, we'll talk a little bit more about this later. Historically, the RICO Act has been specifically earmarked for two different groups. One group being what we'll call traditional organized crime, La Cosa Nostra, so forth, and another traditional group that the RICO Act, at least historically, has been presented or directed to is organized labor.
And so, criminal organizations are typically what this is for. And what is it? What makes it? And we're going to cover a lot of Joe. Tell me, what makes this so far-reaching?
Well, Joe, there are so many things that make it so far-reaching. Before the RICO Act, which was passed in 1970, it was very difficult for the government to prosecute anything but discrete criminal acts. It really didn't have the tools to prosecute criminal syndicates. Except under the general conspiracy statute, which was fairly limited. But with the passage of the RICO Act, it gave the government a tremendous tool by, for example, allowing the government to put into evidence a defendant's past pattern of criminal behavior, which before RICO was evidence that wasn't admissible or relevant.
It was interesting to me because I remember at the sentencing, the prosecutor and the judge, and I want people to understand, you know, the magnitude of this thing. Both said that it was understood that Mr. Dougherty never told anybody to, you know, commit a crime. So you're sitting there and you're like, there's mandatory minimums and there's the burden of proof is not beyond a reasonable doubt. It's a preponderance of the evidence. So you're sitting there and it's like mind-boggling, but this is heavy stuff. And in some cases, you sit there and you think about it and you're like, why would they apply this to organized labor who clearly is not a criminal organization, not created to do that? There can be salt, you know, bad eggs anywhere. Tell me, Mark, where that, you know, comes in.
Well, Joe, first, I just want to correct one thing you said. The minimum mandatories did not flow from the RICO statute.
Okay.
What they flowed is they flowed from some of the underlying conduct and specifically the alleged arsons that were actually part of the RICO conspiracy in the case. But in terms of the sentence, the minimum mandatories didn't flow from the RICO. But that aside, the RICO charge allowed the government to introduce a lot of evidence that was really not admissible or would not have been individually admissible against someone like your father in a standalone case for arson, let's say hypothetically. So although the minimum mandatory didn't flow from RICO, it actually sort of the crimes that the minimum mandatory sentences relate to were certainly enhanced by the use of the RICO statute. So I just wanted to clear that up so anybody who...
Sure,
you know,
no.
With respect to your question, it's just really very important to understand that the statute gives the government a tremendous amount of discretion. As any criminal charging decision comes with, it comes with discretion. You talk about, whether the enterprise or the union is in and of itself a criminal enterprise. Well, it's a criminal enterprise under these RICO statutes if the government asks the grand jury to say it's a criminal enterprise, and then it becomes, for purposes of this, it becomes a criminal enterprise. In certain respects, sometimes a union could be the victim of a different criminal enterprise, and you get very technical, and Joe, we might talk about
sure.
that. But so it really becomes, it's not the RICO statute that makes a legitimate enterprise like a union or something into an illegitimate enterprise. It's the application of that RICO statute to a particular set of facts. And as that application is done, unilaterally by the government, pursuant to certain policies and theories that they unilaterally determine.
Well, the interesting thing is, in a layman's terms, because I understand that, but 99.999% of the individuals in my union, which I grew up in, are hardworking, good standing human beings. You get 20 or 10, 15 bad eggs, and total idiots. And now we're a criminal enterprise. You can understand where. And by the way, this is not about my father's case. This is just an example in our first block, of what inspired us. But how does that occur? Do they take into consideration that it was a small group of individuals that created this situation?
Well, what a prosecutor thinks about in any particular situation is really unique to that situation. Using the iron workers as an example, I think if I had to speculate as to why the government chose to charge it the way they did, the fact of the matter is that, of the 10 bad eggs that you refer to,
sure.
many of them were high-level union officials.
Sure.
And therefore their conduct was attributed to the organization institutionally.
Sure.
And then, to some extent, the titular head of the organization got, one could suggest, got swept up into that. I really don't want to talk too much
sure,
about
no,
Dad's
no,
case.
No,
because
but,
only because we're still duking it out a little
sure,
bit.
Sure, absolutely.
Mark, let me get you to weigh in on it before we go to the break.
On what Mark just said?
Yeah.
I mean, I would agree with Mark, what Mark said about it's really the prosecutor who determines whether or not the union itself ought to be targeted, and not just the few bad apples that are giving the union a bad name.
But it made a lot of sense what Mark just said. I mean, I totally get that. When you got some union officials that were involved, obviously it doesn't help the cause.
Right. I mean, often you have, in my experience, which goes back quite a few decades, you have a situation where the business manager of a particular union may be doing things that he shouldn't. And that tends to taint the entire union.
Sure. This is Saturday Night Live on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, a serious topic and a serious conversation on the big show tonight, Labor and the RICO Act. Mark Cedrone and Joe Mancano in the studio with us tonight, along with Jay Doc and Krause. Back in a moment. And welcome back here to Saturday Night Live on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. This is Saturday Night Live. It's a serious topic and a serious conversation tonight, J-Doc. Labor and the RICO Act. We're going to transition into our B-Block conversation. We're going to deal with government policy and priority discussion.
Yeah, question. Joe Mancano. So we're going to talk about some government policy. Tell us briefly about the government's policies concerning prosecutions of a labor union and labor officials.
Well, this is a longstanding policy. I mean, the government has been involved in the prosecution of labor racketeering for many, many years. It started in the impetus for this started in the 1950s with congressional hearings that were conducted by the McClellan Committee, among others, to look into the infiltration of labor unions by organized crime. And the government or those committees determined that there was a serious problem in the United States regarding the infiltration of labor unions by traditional organized crime. That's the mafia, La Cosa Nostra. And as a result of that, there was impetus to create new legislation which would attack criminal syndicates and their infiltration of labor unions and other legitimate businesses. And that's what ended up being the RICO Act, which was passed in 1970 as a tool for the government to prosecute criminal syndicates and labor unions and union officials. And it's been a priority. It's been a priority of the government pretty much since the passage of the RICO Act. And sort of flowing from that was the creation of the Department of Labor Office of Inspector General, which Mark, talk about.
I was going to ask you, why doesn't the Department of Labor handle this particular situation when it comes to a union?
Well, they do. They are the primary investigating agency. And that's what I was about to add on this whole thing. I mean, you talk about government priorities and policies. You know, here you have a specific department and a specific subject whose goal it is to prosecute either crimes that involve either the union as a criminal entity or the union as a victim. So you have a department that is geared towards union-related crime. That's its focus. That's what they live for.
And labor violations.
And labor violations. Mm-hmm. You don't have a department within the justice, for example, that a Department of Justice that deals with uniquely criminal activity of the business world. Yes, there's all different kind of program-related, initiatives, but you don't have an entity-based initiative like you do here. See, we can all have our theories on this. I mean, I believe that, I know the history of this. But part of the history of this goes back to America's disdain and hatred for the labor movement, that goes back as far, honestly, into, when it was associated with what's the most anti-American thing one could say, communism, right? I mean, the labor movement has its historical roots in what, the early 1900s communist unit, movement. And I think there's a prejudice against labor unions.
Because they've evolved clearly since then.
Oh, absolutely. No, there's no question they've evolved since then, and they serve a valid purpose. I'm a product of a union household. I mean, I understand.
But what you're saying is that sentiment is still, in some cases, held over by.
Every government decision and policy is changes with respect to, changes of administration. We haven't yet seen what the current administration is going to do with respect to the emphasis of the Department of Labor, except maybe try to eliminate the whole department, right? But I wonder what the enforcement policies are going to be going forward. I mean, just to give you some idea, the Department of Labor, and this isn't stuff I'm making up, the Department of Labor has a lot of information, available to the public. In the last couple of years, they've opened up approximately 1,500 investigations. Of those 1,500 investigations, I don't know, maybe 500 or so are specifically, quote, labor racketeering investigations. Of those cases, labor racketeering investigations that were opened up, probably 300 of them were closed. 200 or more were referenced for prosecution. Of the ones that were referred, rather, for prosecution, 190 or so, and my math could be off here. I'm just looking at some global statistics. 190 or so resulted in indictments, and of those, approximately 185 resulted in convictions. Now, not all of those are where the union is considered the criminal enterprise. Some of them are where the union is the victim of some embezzlement of union funds or something like that. But those are pretty significant numbers.
They are. My experience is, and I think yours is too, is that, I mean, the overwhelming the number of unions are absolutely dedicated to procuring work for the members, abiding by the law, and doing what their charter is meant to do, and that is represent members, collectively bargain, and do things that are for the best of their members and the middle class. You're going to get, like I said, your bad eggs everywhere. One thing I want to talk about is two things. You mentioned those statistics. This is a layman's impression, but once you're caught in that web, it's hard to get out of that web because as far as if you're caught in a RICO action or if you're, because it's so far reaching, how difficult is it for somebody to actually beat the government in that type of situation?
I mean, it does happen. Particularly with individuals who are further down the chain in terms of the hierarchy, it's much more difficult for union leadership if they're pulled into a RICO prosecution to escape because they're looked at as the most responsible parties, and they are tainted by the activities of all the people that are underneath.
What is the burden of proof?
Well, in a criminal case, burden of proof is beyond a reasonable doubt. It's right. A high burden of proof, at least in theory it is, but it gets made easier by all of the evidentiary advantages that the government ends up receiving as a result of the use of the RICO statute, which I think we're going to talk about those advantages in the next block.
Yeah, right. Was I mistaken in because I could have sworn that I heard, in RICO it was preponderance of the evidence?
No, same. It's the criminal burden of proof.
Okay.
I mean, there are civil RICOs. So, the RICO statute has been used civilly to take over unions, for example. Mm-hmm. And there would be a lower burden of proof. But for the criminal prosecutions, it's always beyond a reasonable doubt.
This is Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. We're presented by Weinerman Pain and Wellness, Serious Doctors for Serious Injuries. In the studio with us tonight, Mark Cedrone and Joe Mancano. When we come back after the break, as we move into our next block, as Mark said, some discussion on some legal concepts. We'll get into all of that when we come back. And back here live on Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, presented by Weinerman Pain and Wellness, Serious Doctors for Serious Injuries, powered by Pond LaHockey, Stern, and Giordano, fueled by the Sonesta Hotel, J-Doc, where we had a great, great labor leader roundtable last week. We'll have our next one in January. More on that labor leader roundtable as we get through the holiday season and we get into January. But those, they have been fantastic at the Sonesta
Hotel.
Absolutely.
I do want to say one thing about that, the labor leader roundtable. It was unbelievable. We talked about the paycheck deception bill. Everybody who's out there, continue to call your state representatives and your state senators and tell them you oppose the paycheck protection bill. We call it paycheck deception. Yesterday, it got postponed on the House floor. So just keep fighting for that. It's obviously important to our union community.
We'll keep an eye on that. Coming up the top of the hour, Dan Loney will be here, and he'll take you into the night on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
So as we sit here and continue our conversation with Mark Cedrone and Joe Mancano of Cedrone Mancano, Joe, I mean, Mark, you had said, obviously, you're the product of a union household and a union family. Did that have anything to do with, you know, your passion to obviously get involved in these types of issues?
I can't say specifically. I mean, other than I learned that sometimes the little guy can get screwed by the big government. I mean, you know, and that's something that I've been fighting my entire career for, is representing people who have problems and disputes with the United States government. That's what, you know, I do for a living. That's what our firm's primary focus is on. If that's a product of my my father being a member and a steward for Teamster 929, then it's a product of it. But I can't say it's something conscious.
No, I got it. When you get a case that comes across your table, and what is the immediate approach, because you know how what you're up against. You're up against the United States government, unlimited funds, crazy stuff. Joe, I'll start with you. What your immediate approach?
Joe, I'm not sure that the approach in a RICO case involving labor racketeering is any different than it is in any other criminal case that we handle. I mean, we tend to have the same approach in every case. You want to hear what the client has to say. You want to spend as much time as you possibly can investigating the government's evidence. Our approach is that we leave no stone unturned when we're reviewing the government's evidence and conducting our own investigation in an effort to determine what happened. The government has a tremendous advantage in these labor racketeering cases, as they do in many criminal cases. They spend years investigating them.
Unlimited resources.
Unlimited resources. They have the power of the grand jury, which is an incredible power, where they can subpoena people, they can immunize people to get evidence, make all sorts of promises to these people to get their evidence, to get them to say what they want them to say.
I mean, as a layman, I'm sitting here. Somebody walks into somebody who has a light affiliation or did something, that was a part of something stupid, and somebody can come in and say, I got you on 35 years, and they understand they're going to spend their entire annuity or their life savings, or you can cooperate. And at that point, that you're up against something there.
But, our job is to develop the evidence, which shows that there isn't another side to what's happened. And that's what we spend our time doing. And we spend as much time as we need to. And we, as I said earlier, we leave no stone unturned in doing that.
Mark Cedrone, let me transition to you. When we went into the break coming out of our previous segment, you teased for the audience some legal concepts. We were going to get into some specific legal concepts for our C block conversation. Where do you begin with that?
Well, we could start out with how the RICO statute actually works. I mean, with the RICO statute, does in there. It's a very, let's start out. It's an extremely complicated
statute. And you got 5 minutes to
I've got 5 minutes. All right. So that's that. I'm going to already bail on that. But the reality of it is what it does is it basically combines any universe of crime, something called predicate acts or RICO predicates. And you know, if there's a pattern of what's called racketeering activity, and what constitutes racketeering activity is you know, could be a list as long as my arm, and it's done collectively and it's done through an enterprise, okay, then it becomes, you know, this concept of criminal conduct. You know, Joe's going to talk a little bit about what it means to be an enterprise, because that's really an important issue in these cases. And sometimes, you know, I think that it could have even been an issue in your father's case, to be perfectly candid.
Sure.
You know, was the union the vehicle for committing crime, or was it the vehicle for other people to commit crime so they could advance within the union and protect their interest in the union?
Sure.
And their
own personal interests.
Yeah. And how it's couched and how it's phrased is really then becomes how the government decides it's couched and phrased.
Right. I mean, as Mark said, the RICO statute's very complicated, and it is directed toward people who are employed by or associated with an enterprise, labor union, some other business, et cetera. Who conduct or participate in the affairs of that enterprise, that labor union, through a pattern of racketeering activity. That's essentially it. And the racketeering activity, as Mark said, can include a whole laundry list of crimes: murder, extortion, robbery, or a whole list of federal fraud offenses, federal sexual offenses, you name it.
State court offenses.
It seems unfair, and maybe I'm biased, that they would lump labor unions in. Look, you're going to get individuals, even in a business, that take advantage of their position. And the labor union has specific rules and regulations. Like I said, so many good people involved, and I know you guys know this, we were talking about during a break, in running, you know, labor unions for the, you know, obviously to represent individuals for workers' rights. But it seems to me unfair that, you know, laws and a statute that was created for actual criminal organizations, which means that you can't, if you're a member of Kosher Notion, I don't know anything about that, but you're always going to be involved in, there's no, you know, I don't know if there's no non-criminal activity, but that's the point of it. The labor unions, in order for them to go bad, you have to get individuals to do stupid things. And that doesn't mean they're a criminal organization. It just means that guy's an idiot.
Joe, yeah, it's a very good point you make. I mean, when you're talking about La Cosa Nostra or some criminal organization,
which, by the way, I'm not talking right. against anybody. I don't want to be turning my car on and sleeping with the fishes. But go ahead.
I mean, you're talking about a fundamentally corrupt organization,
right? Union is not that.
Right. A union is not that. A union is a lawful organization that has many laudable objectives and goals, and is sometimes corrupted by a few bad apples.
Right, and that's my point. How, like, in other words, and look, guys, you guys, you know, do an amazing job in this area, and believe me, you know, this is what the show is about, showing, you know, best way to obviously, you know, not have to deal with the RICO Act is to make sure nobody's doing anything wrong. Let's get that straight. Certainly, I get that. Some people have questioned its, you know, constitutionality. It's been taken to, am I wrong when it's been taken to the Supreme Court, and it's and literally on its constitution, and it's stood up to, you know, to those challenges?
Yes. I mean, it's constitutional. It's been challenged as being unconstitutional, and it is constitutional.
The law of the land. It's that simple. We have to live with it. And you have to deal with it on a daily basis. And as I said, it's a significant issue and problem for potential defendants in cases, especially when there are people who are specifically looking at particular organizations, such as the way the Department of Labor looks at labor unions. So, you know, you have to learn to live with it and deal with it.
This is Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. In studio tonight, Mark Cedrone and Joe Mancano joining us tonight for a very special broadcast, a serious topic, a serious conversation, labor and the RICO Act. As we go to the break, we'll remind our listeners to stay with us. When we come back, Mark and Joe will get into specific cases. We'll do that in our final block as J-Doc and Krause roll on a Saturday night. Back in a moment. Back here live on Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. J-Doc and Krause in the studio on a Saturday night in Philly.
Well, we've been talking about a lot of things here, and with Mark Cedrone and Joe Mancano. Mark, let's get into some of the specific cases that we've talked about specifically before the break.
I'm getting ready for the program. You know, you asked me to come up with some concrete examples that might, you know, highlight some of the things that we're talking about, and you know. There's two cases that really come to mind. They both happen to emanate from the Massachusetts area. The first is a charge and ultimate acquittal at trial of some labor officials who were essentially charged with extortion. This was not a RICO case, but it could have been a RICO case because extortion is a predicate act, or one of the defined predicate acts. What these fellows were doing, according to the indictment, apparently the jury didn't accept the evidence, was that they were basically using strong arm tactics to try to get the TV program Top Chef to use union workers. These fellows went to trial. Their lawyers aggressively defended the case. It seemed to be, from everything I've read about the case, it seemed to be a bit of a stretch to call this a labor abuse case. And these fellows were found not guilty. Another fascinating case.
The enormity of that, by the way, may have had something to do with the with Top Chef himself, with the program.
Well, and see, and that goes to we talked earlier, and we will go take a step back for a second. That goes to government initiatives and policies. Okay, the government will tell you that they want to prosecute high profile cases because it enhances deterrence and so forth and so on. So you're right. That involves a TV program. It got a lot of coverage. The government now, I'm sure, regrets bringing that case because it didn't really advance their deterrent concept. But labor unions themselves, in and of themselves, are high profile, right? They're big collective entities. So that's why there's, I think, partly there's this greater emphasis on prosecuting labor unions when no labor union should be prosecuted.
Unbelievable point. That's a great point.
But another very interesting case involves a RICO charge, for which a couple of union guys were prosecuted. And this is really fascinating because it is reminiscent of a little bit of some cases that are near and dear to people's hearts here. Right. But the underlying predicates here were really attempting to get work through picket line activities. Okay. And there was some of that in Dad's case. That's what this fiddler case that I just talked about was about. But in this case, United States versus Bohar, I believe the name of it is, the defendants were charged essentially with engaging in peaceful picket lining activity, putting the rat outside that we see, no violence, no nothing. The government's theory in that case on the extortions that underlie the RICO was very simply that the picketing at these places was an effort to try to basically force, the non-union contractors to use the union work. Well, that's exactly what it is, right? That's why you picket. That's why unions picket. We think you shouldn't.
Well, they also picket to signify people are getting discriminated against inside for wage discrimination.
I understand that.
Sure.
But the government took that and took it a step further and said, well, that's a corrupt motive in and of itself. And they charged these fellows not only with the extortions, but with RICO. And they were convicted and they were sentenced and they were given big sentences and they took an appeal. But fortunately, the Court of Appeals looked at this and said, whoa, wait a minute. This isn't what RICO is about. This isn't what extortion's about.
So the NLRB says you can pick it.
Well, I'm going to read a line from the court's opinion reversing the convictions.
Sure.
Hobbs Act liability, that's the extortion, and that was what was made part of the RICO. Hobbs Act liability, you know, under the theory used in this case, according to the Third Circuit, would appear, not Third Circuit, the First Circuit, would appear to attach any time unions threaten to picket peacefully for jobs at prevailing wage that the employer did not want or need the union's members to perform. The court went on to say, we find it troubling a theory of a case that would criminalize labor union activity to achieve such an end when the NLRB's interpretation of the unfair labor practices statute labels the exaction of a wage for the very same end as not being an unfair labor practice. So the National Labor Relations Board said that what these fellows were doing is absolutely lawful, you know, under the federal labor laws. Somehow, you know, the Department of Labor on the other side of this decided, nah, it's not. This is a racketeering enterprise. This is one of the most serious crimes that there could be. The heck with the NLRB.
That's a heck of a gap in between. That's right.
I don't understand the gap, right, to be perfectly honest with you.
That's right. This relates back to a point we made at the beginning of the program. When I look at these kinds of cases, it suggests to me the U.S. Department of Justice's fundamental antipathy or hostility toward labor unions and labor union activity.
And like Mark said, the high-profile situation,
right,
it got to affect it as well, right?
Right, right. And, you know, and I think you see that time and time again. Not to get, you know, too far off the topic, but, you know, we talked about how powerful a weapon RICO is criminally. There are all sorts of civil remedies that flow, you know, that the RICO statute contains, including the ability of the government to take over a union that they believe is corrupt.
And we have two examples of that in the Philadelphia area. Historically, you have the Roofers Union, mm-hmm, and you have the Hotel Workers Union in Atlantic City.
And this represents a fundamental collision between the policies of protecting union members, which is a laudable policy, which the government would argue it has to do, but also a policy in the labor laws where unions are allowed to manage and police themselves. There's a tension between those two things.
Listen, we're gonna come back, and you know, we're gonna do another show. I mean, obviously this is incredible. I love to talk about juries. I mean, we have experts like you and talking about how complicated this is and the gaps between some of the theories in the agencies. My God, Mark Cedrone, Joe Mancano of Cedrone and Mancano. First of all, your contact information if people want to get in touch with your
area
firm.
Code 215-925-2500. Website at Cedrone-Mancano.com. That's CEDRONE-MANCANO.com.
Guys, thank you so much for being a part of the broadcast. Unbelievable information.
Thank you for having us.
Well done. Great stuff. Great job. Great show tonight here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. This is Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor, a serious topic and conversation tonight, labor, and the RICO Act. J-Doc, before we say goodnight, we have 15 seconds remaining. I want to give you an opportunity to welcome in one of our new partners, Chapman Automotive, and Jim Stevenson joining us. Give him a big
welcome. My God. Well, we are so happy to have Chapman Automotive back on, and Jim Stevenson, get to know him. He's a longtime friend of labor. Just happy to have him on board. Absolutely.
All right. All good stuff. And again, a special thanks to Mark Cedrone and Joe Mancano for coming into the studio. This is Saturday Night Live on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Up next, top of the hour, Dan Loney. He takes you into the night. Until next time, for J-Doc, I'm Joe Krause. See you next time.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.